Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
My sister Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with Michael P. McCarthy.
Good evening.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, you're doing great. You're not doing 1,000 tax returns like I am.
I'm answering thousands of questions.
Yeah, you are. You'll do what, about 50?
I normally do, but one of our team members is trying to set a world record for tax completion, so all of the return, a good...
But you're going to review, what, about...
Oh,
40, 50
or more.
Something like that. Okay, yeah. Well, there you go. That's good. You got to keep that CPA license rolling, rocking and rolling there. I got my renewal in the email today. You know, I got until May 22nd to get everything into them. But I have enough credits already accrued that if I wanted to, I could do nothing. But I'm not going to. I'm going to give them all 120 that I have right now. And but I don't think I got the ethics questions, the tests or things yet. I think I'm missing those. I'm not positive. I'm
going to go back and look. Hopefully you got a couple days left.
Yeah, I have a month and a half, 2 months actually. So anyway, we're here on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, and we're here to answer your questions. We're here to direct the conversation in the direction you want to go. And maybe you got a question, say, you know, hey, if you answer this question, it would be really helpful to me. And give me some really good information on something that's really important to me. And, you know, there's also 3, 4, 5, who knows how many other listeners out there that are going to want to hear that same question answered. But they're just not the kind of people that are going to call in and ask that question. So if you want to call and ask yours and help other people too at the same time, 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask your question. So, if you while we're waiting for people to call in, see if anybody does. Mike, what topics do you have? Anything?
Well, you said this was too complicated, but I have faith in our listener base. So, one of the things that I want our listeners to know, or we want our listeners to know, is that let's say you're in one of those high income tax areas.
Yep.
And you're not able to make a Roth contribution directly.
Because you're a bloody rich person.
Bloody rich person.
Bloody rich people don't get to make it. And what's the income level, Mikey?
Oh, man.
$125 for single, $198 for married in 2021, going up to something like $129 for single and $202 for married, I think it is.
I just
but
look
if you
it up
make
whenever
more,
I...
But if you make more than that, you're either going to do very little or you're going to do nothing. So
the point is, high income, you've been told you can't put money into a Roth IRA, and your retirement savings are all in a 401k, or 403b works too, right?
Yeah.
So the thing is that a lot of people think, well, I just can't do it. But if you have a good tax advisor or a good financial planner, they can guide you on how to do something called a non-deductible IRA that you then convert to a Roth. And this is one of those things that when we meet high-income working individuals is often just not being done and no one's told them about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we just had a client not too long ago, Mike, very high net worth, came in and we're looking at their tax return and they've got $80,000 of non-deductible IRAs they'd built up over the last 10 or 15 years. And I'm like, we got to get this converted over. But nobody, a really big accounting firm he was working with, really big, quote-unquote, financial people, you know, and none of them could come up with a solution as to how to get that money over there.
Well, an argument that you always make is there's two types of tax services, right?
Right. There's the tax preparer who just puts the numbers in the tax return. But this is a big accounting firm. They should be doing tax planning, and I know they do, but they weren't doing it for this one. You know, they were just putting the numbers in and sending it back out to them and charging them a lot of money to do that.
Right.
And And he was working with a big wirehouse brokerage firm, and they just don't do any tax planning. They even say it right on their forms. You know, don't look to us to do tax planning for you.
Now, you and I were having these conversations before we went on air. And by the way, open show, all lines open. We were talking about some of the other things that kind of bug us. And one of them, let's shift it to the other side. These are the folks that are already retired, have their money in their IRAs and whatnot, and are required to take it out each year. And a lot of people like that are charitably inclined, aren't they?
Sure. I mean, you know, I mean, most people are giving $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 away to their church or to their university or to a medical institution of some sort. And they're doing it out of cash. And you should be doing it out of your IRA. Qualified charitable distributions. But you know why a lot of people aren't doing qualified charitable distributions, Mike?
Why?
It's because the financial advisor that they're working with doesn't want the burden of them calling in and asking for charitable distributions. They'd rather just pump the check out to their, you know, for their required minimum and call it a day.
Well, and another angle of that, they may not even feel qualified to advise on that stuff if they don't have a good tax background.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. They might not even know about it. That's the worst of all scenarios. But there's a lot of companies that just don't want anything to do. We just saw this recently, right? We saw where a lot of Schwab people like us who are independent fee-only advisors are leaving it up to Schwab to tell the client about their required minimum distribution. Well, Schwab's not going to ask them about, you know, hey, would you like to
do— No, Schwab doesn't have the knowledge to do that.
No, they don't, and they don't want the admin extra to do it. But, you know, they're fine with us doing it and telling the client.
Yeah, they like it.
Yeah, they love it.
You know? I just got back from Phoenix, as you know, and got to meet with a good bit of the people at Schwab's corporate office. And you know, our part of the industry now makes up more than half of their assets. And, you know, they're very much committed to the RIA industry and that we're the people who do the planning. We're the people who do the individual work.
We've got to go, Mike. We've got to take our first pause. We're on an open show and nobody's calling in. Nobody likes us tonight. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in. 410-922-6680. Lines are open. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back with Steppenwolf. We're on an open show, 410. I knew I could make you laugh sooner or later. 410-922-6680. We do have a couple callers online, and we want to go to them right away. Ken in Cadenceville, how can we help you?
Hi, Drew. I have a real fast question about my financial advisor. As far as, if he's a fiduciary, right, which he should be, I guess.
Well, not most people. Most people in this industry are not. 90% are not.
Okay, so you were talking one time about if you're a fiduciary, you had to provide some kind of license number. I can't remember what it was.
If you're a fiduciary, if you're a fee-only advisor, you have to provide the client with a ADV Part 2. Mikey could tell you more about this. Mikey, so you're our compliance officer.
I am. So every March, we send out a Bible-thick document, and it's got multiple parts. But there's a form CRS, and the form CRS is the most condensed version of it. But I would argue two things. One, make sure you get that document and you look it over. But the thing that really drives me nuts is how many people don't ever go on advisor check on the Securities and Exchange website and, you know, look up my advisor to see what he's gotten in, what he or she has gotten in trouble for.
Yeah, but the one way you know that your person is not a fiduciary is if they're a licensed with a brokerage firm.
Right.
Now, they could be a part-time fiduciary. They could be working under an RIA umbrella for, you know, 15 minutes when they're talking to you, and then the next 2 hours talk to you as if they're a broker and not a fiduciary to you.
Gotcha.
All right?
All right. Well, I'm going to give you guys a call one day and try to set something up to have a meeting.
All right. Well, great, Ken. Great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. I very appreciate the information.
Take care.
Have a good day.
Bye. So anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680, and their line's open. We're going to Tom in Towson. Tom, how can we help you?
Hi, Drew. Great show.
Well, thanks.
Got two questions. First question is, I have money in a short-term bond ETF, short-term.
Okay.
And also a short-term bond mutual fund.
Okay.
Why are they going? Why did they go down in price when interest rates go up? I thought that affected the intermediate and the long term bond funds. Why did my short term, short duration bonds go down?
Well, they're still going to go down, and it depends on what type of short term bonds are they? Are they U.S. government short term bonds,
no,
or are they?
No, they're corporate.
They're corporate. So you got some jitters. That the Federal Reserve is hell-bent on raising interest rates to try to slow the economy down, and corporate short-term bonds are feeling the effects to some degree right now that maybe we're going to induce a recession, and some of those bonds in those portfolios might not do real well, and that's why they're going down. Now, one of the good news is to you—
But my intermediate bond funds did not go down. They went up a little bit. That's crazy.
Are they U.S. government or corporate?
Corporate.
Are they AAA corporate, investment grade corporate?
They're the blue chip. Yeah.
Yeah, but they still shouldn't have gone up. They should have gone down for sure.
Both are Vanguard.
Why? Oh yeah, they no, but your intermediate bonds should definitely have gone down. There is no doubt about that.
They did not. They did not go down.
Tell me, what's the symbol on it?
I'll have to look it up, and I have to call you after the show. But
Because there's no way there's an intermediate bond, even if it's a U.S. intermediate government bond fund, that they went up at all this year. I don't know of any bond funds that are up this year, actually. Any, Mike?
No, and I'm trying to get the number to come back up. The Vanguard Intermediate Term Bond Index Fund, Admiral Shares, VBILX.
I think that's it. I'm not sure.
It is down for the month, probably, and it's pretty far down year to date.
How far down
is it? Coming from about 1180 down to about 11.
So it's down about 4%.
Yeah, it was 6.27% year to date because I can now read.
6.27%. Yeah, I don't know of any bond funds, Tom, that are done. Now, one of the things I will say about your short-term bond funds is that if they're really short duration, they're probably only down slightly. In other words, they may be down 1-3%, but most bonds this year are down 5-7%.
Well, these are not ultra short. These are like 3 years and below.
3 year definitely. Anything above 66 months. Anything above 6 months has been getting beat up like there's no tomorrow.
Should I sell these bond funds?
I don't know what your overall goals and objectives are.
Wealth creation.
Yeah, but I don't know what percentage it is. I don't know how much volatility and so forth.
The rest of the portfolio, your timeline, retirement, your draw.
And so forth. We've got one of the bond guys that we like a lot, a guy named Scott Minard. He believes that interest rates are going to peak soon and that we're going to make another big dip down again. That's his opinion. Now, you know, he's a very good, but he's not the gospel, you know? Let's put it that way. We'll see.
But I see with the midterm elections and then 2024, the election year, I don't think they really do want to raise interest rates.
Well, let's put it this way. The raising of interest rates will definitely happen this year, okay? And it might go on to a little bit of next year. But the minute we get into, let's say, the second quarter of 2023, they are definitely going to want to be trying to bring interest rates down and get the economy roaring, that by the beginning of 2024, there is nothing but a good economy.
Of course.
That's very standard in the industry. So, I mean, in politics, that the Federal Reserve will almost – they even tried that for Jimmy Carter in 1980. I'm serious. They tried it for Jimmy Carter in 1980. Go back and look. Volcker was raising rates like there was no tomorrow, and all of a sudden, just into the end of 1979 – He started to drop interest rates so that when he went into 1980, he tried to have a good economy, and it sort of backfired on him. He sort of got higher inflation, and then minute that election got anywhere close to finished, he started to raise interest rates all the way through 1981.
You got time for another question?
I got to run in about 30 seconds, but you can ask it.
International stock funds. Should I get out of them? I mean, if I have regular U.S. stocks, U.S. companies, they are international in themselves. Is there a need to buy, to be into an international stocks?
Well, I'm going to answer that question when I come back, okay? It'll be the first thing I'm going to answer when I come back. And I have to take a hard break right here at 6:29, or Chris is going to give me the evil eye.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with Michael P. McCarthy. And we had a great question from Mike, or Tom, I'm sorry. Tom, are you still there? Okay, he's not there. We're going to answer it on the air, though. His question was, do I really need to own international stocks when most American companies are doing a lot of international business? Don't you get the international exposure by just owning multinational U.S. companies? And the answer is yes and no, all at the same time. For example, all markets run in cycles, okay? So between 2000 and 2008, the United States S&P 500, well, actually, by the end of 2009, 2010, the S&P 500 really made nobody any money whatsoever, period. You were dead in the water during that period of time. You might have had a brief increase in 2007, and then it was all wiped out again, and you started over all again from 2008 and so forth. So, but here's the point, that if you had owned international securities between 2000 and 2008, 9, 10 even, you would have been on the positive side because China went through the roof. Emerging market stocks went through the roof. Europe came on strong finally when they got the euro in, and a lot of those countries started to eliminate the inflation that they had been hampered with and so forth. So, you know, you've had these last 10 years where the U.S. S&P 500 has been the dominant market. And now you might be headed for a reversal. And so I would never take international out of my portfolio. I try to keep it in the 30% range international, 70% U.S., but we can go more international. We can go up to 60% U.S. and 40% international. So we always like to have some international, and I'd suggest you always try to have some international. We're going to Mike in
Annapolis.
I put my glasses somewhere.
Mike
in Annapolis. Mike in Annapolis, how can we help you?
So I was listening to your show, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago, And I caught the tail end of a conversation with a gentleman on there who talked about an investment, and the only thing I can remember or identify was some sort of an I investment.
I bonds.
What was it called?
I bonds.
Oh, an I bond.
Yep, now, U.S. Treasury I bonds. It's the inflation equivalent of an E bond. Are you familiar with them?
No, not at all. That's why I'm calling.
You've heard about e-bonds before, right? United States savings bonds?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so e-bonds just pay an interest, right?
Right.
And it's a variable interest to some degree. Well, i-bonds, what they do is they give you a little bit of an interest rate, okay? And then what they do is at the end of the year, they adjust the bond for the rate of inflation. Okay, so okay. This year, if you buy an I-bond right now, you're going to probably get something like 6% by the time they get the inflation adjusted in there with the interest rate. It could be anywhere from 5 to 7%. So a lot of people are running out buying I-bonds right now because they know the inflation adjustment is going to be pretty significant. And the only thing you have to do is own an I-bond for about 2 years to avoid any penalties for trying to liquidate one.
Any kind of tax advantage with them?
Yeah, they tax defer just like e-bonds do. So if you don't want to report the interest, you don't have to until you cash them in, which is 30 years. You can hold them for 30 years, just like a double e-bond. The only negative to i-bonds is you can only buy 10,000 worth per person per year.
Ah, okay.
All right?
Well, that's better than nothing.
Yeah. TreasuryDirect.com if you like to use the web, treasurydirect.com, or just Google search iBonds, and you'll get all the information you could ever want, my friend.
Great. Well, thanks very much. I really appreciate your show. It's very informative.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike. I really appreciate you listening. All right. Take care, my friend, and calling in. That's even better, calling in. 410-922-6680. And, you know, Mike, I want to remind everyone that if you want to, you can even take your refund from your tax return and buy I-bonds. So the only thing is you can only buy up to $5,000 and they're going to send you paper. So let's say you're going to get a $4,000 refund and you don't really need it. So you say, hey, I'll tell you what, give me my refund in I-bonds. And they'll do it. They'll send you paper I-bonds for $4,000.
And what's the first thing you should do when you get them?
Put them in your mattress?
No, I was going to say get your My Savings Direct login and what's the opposite of certificate?
It's Treasury Direct.
Treasury Direct.
Treasury Direct login.
Login.
And then send them off to the Treasury and store them electronically with them.
Exactly.
That's right.
Don't
put them in your mattress.
The electronic ones don't start good fires.
Anyway, we're here on an open show. We've got Steve on the line. We're going to go to him in a second. But there's at least three other lines open there. 410-922-6680. We'd love to talk to you. We're going to Steve in Pasadena. Steve, how can we help you?
Oh, yeah. I bought a house about 15 years ago, and I'm probably going to be selling it in the near future.
Oh, good time to be selling, my friend. Isn't it?
I'm selling because it's the right time, and I think I'll, you know, make a good bit of money off it, but I don't intend to buy anything right away.
You don't have to. That's the good news, my friend.
I don't know anything about it. So
let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What did you approximately pay? $100,000, $200,000, $300,000?
I paid $175,000.
And what do you think it's going to be worth now when you sell it?
I think it's going to be worth about $330,000.
Okay. You married or single?
Single.
Single. Okay. So here's the good news, my friend. The way the law works now has nothing to do with buying a new place. That was a law that was in place 24 years ago. Last time that law was in place. So 24 years ago, if you sold a house and didn't buy a new house of more value or higher, you were in trouble. You had to pay taxes on it. But in 1998, they passed a new law. And here's how the new law goes, Steve. If you lived in that house as your principal residence for 2 years or more, which you did because you said 15, right?
Yep.
Okay. So that's more than two, if I'm not mistaken. Mike, is that more than two?
More than two.
More than two. Okay. So you got that feature covered, more than 2 years. You can exclude up to $250,000 of gain. So let's say you sell a place, you buy it for $200, you sell it for $425. That's $225,000 of gain. You can exclude $250,000. Well, you're under $250,000, so there's no gain whatsoever. You don't have to pay a nickel in taxes. And the numbers you just said, chances are you're not going to pay any either.
That is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, now here's another good thing for you, too. I'm assuming in that 15 years you put some fix-up into that house, too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you need to accumulate all the money you think you spend fixing that house up, and you need to be ready with that. So you say, okay, I paid $175 for it, and I had settlement costs of $5,000 when I bought it, so that means my cost basis is $180, and then I put a new kitchen in it, I put a new bathroom in it. Am I boring you, Mike?
No.
I put a new bathroom in it, I put a new roof in it, and that cost me $45,000, so that's $180 plus $45. My cost basis is now $225. That means I could sell the place for as much as $475,000 and not pay a nickel in capital gains tax. All right?
That's great news.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
I wanted to give you good news tonight, Steve, and I think I just did. All right. So chances are you're going to pay no capital gains on anything. It's all tax-free to you, whether you buy a house or not. You go on a good vacation after you sell that place, my friend. All right?
All right. Thanks a lot. Great show. I appreciate it.
Take care. I love that call. You know, I mean, it gave you a good chance to really, you know, a lot of people, you know, they're thinking of old tax laws. You hear that all the time.
I think you left out also, you know, you get to reduce your gain by the commission you pay to the agent selling it, too.
Oh, I didn't even get to that. You know, so if he sells it for $400,000, he pays a commission of $20,000, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be about $20,000. His sale price is really only $380. It's not $400 because he had to pay $20 to sell it. So his sale price is $380. So he could sell it for probably as much as $500,000 and not have any gain that he has to pay tax on.
Yep, so absolutely.
It's a lot of good news there. You know, one of the things I also wanted to talk about is tax brackets. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about tax brackets and the terror.
Demystify them.
The terror of going into another tax bracket, you know, and the horrible things that happen when you go into another tax bracket. Because all kinds of miserable,
everyone is listening,
terrible,
shaking in fear.
Horrible things happen if you go into another tax bracket. And I'm going to explain, you know, how I realize that going into another tax bracket could be one of the most terrifying things you could ever do in your lifetime, Mikey.
It's not even the Halloween special.
Yeah. Anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question of your own. And when I come back, I'm going to tell you why you do not want to go into another tax bracket when we come back from this pause, and I'm going to explain that to you. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Me and Julio down by the graveyard. Right? Once again, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Hey, old Julio, why is he hanging out by the graveyard anyway?
I think it's a schoolyard, isn't it?
I have have no idea, Mike.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know.
Well, stop harassing Chris.
We're here on an open show, but I've got to answer the question going into a tax bracket, why you don't want to go into another tax bracket. And the answer is there is no reason to fear going into another tax bracket. So let me tell you the story, Mike. About 7 or 8 years ago, I had a client and we were talking. I did his taxes and I said, and you went into the 24% bracket. And he's like, his eyes got big and he was like terrified. And he goes, oh, my. I went into the 24% tax bracket? And I said, yeah, you went into the I said, yeah, it's not a big deal, you know, 24% tax bracket. And he goes, oh, man, I don't want, you know, is there anything we can do to get it done? And I said, no, I did everything I could. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me.
He thinks.
People think when you go into another tax bracket that it retroactively causes all of your income to be taxed at that level. And it's like a retroactive thing. It's like...
like all of it's taxed at 24%?
Yeah, you were just taxed at 22%, but oh, boom, you went $10 too high. Boom, 24%. Give it 24%. And that's not the way it works. If I make $200,000, and that's my taxable income, I'm married. I'm going to get the 10% tax bracket on the first $20,000 that I made. And then I'm going to get the 12% tax bracket on the next $60,000 that I made. And then I'm going to get the 22% bracket on the next $80,000 I make. And it's only that last $40,000 that I'm going to pay the 24% tax bracket on.
Right.
Tax brackets are only for worrying about when you're doing tax planning for the future. But once you get to the end of the year, what tax bracket you're in is totally irrelevant. It's only relevant for what you're planning for the future.
Now, all this is true, but we don't have too much time to talk about it so we can get to our callers. But there are some tax cliffs.
Yes, we should talk about tax cliffs. Now, those are something you need to worry about. Tax cliffs, and they're out there, but that's another thing for next week. We're going to Dave in Overlay. Dave, how can we help you?
Hi, guys. I know calculating RMD for this year goes back to the balance as of December 31st of last year, but I'm down about 20% right now, and coming up on this coming December, I might be down even more. Do I calculate the RMD still on last December's
yes.
balance?
Your RMD is calculated on December 31st, 2021, no matter what, for 2022, unless Congress steps in sometime this year and says, oh, no, we're not going to make you do an RMD this year, like they did in 2020, like they did in 2008. But at this point in time, there's no indication that they're going to relieve the RMD for 2022.
Okay.
So, you know, what you need to do is you can wait, see if you get a market rebound of some sort. And if you do, that's when you should take your RMD, or you should have some conservative money in. You can liquidate your conservative money and take your RMD from that. But if you don't, then you're just going to have to wait and try to time it the best you can. Now, you did have a good market rally over the last week or two. You should have had some recovery, you know, just recently. Now, it went back down again a little today. But that's the best I can tell you, unfortunately, my friend.
Okay.
Now, I will say you do have better tables to calculate your RMD off of, because there's new tables for 2022, which means that you can, instead of doing whatever, you know, if your number was 25 the year before, it's going to be like 27 again. So they moved the life expectancy up by about 2 years. So that's going to help lower your number you have to calculate this year.
That's good information, but is that, that's not for 2021 that's for 2022.
That's for your 2022 RMD, the one you're calculating right now.
But it's based on the balance of December 2021.
That's correct, but there's two parts to your calculation. Your numerator is the balance of your IRA at the end of 2021, but then the denominator is the life expectancy factor that you had to pull. If you used
27%, yeah.
Yeah. But if you use the numbers from 2021, it would have been even more money you had to take at their new tables this year, 2022, which increased your life expectancy, which makes your withdrawal slightly lower. But you're absolutely right. If you're down, it's hurting right now. And so you might see something from Congress, but right now we're not getting any indication of that. All right, my friend?
Okay, thanks for your help.
All right. Good call. I can understand his pain on that one. Joe in Lutherville.
Okay, sir.
Yes.
Thanks to you, sir. I have a Roth IRA.
Oh. And, am I the beneficiary, though?
I didn't put you down as a beneficiary. I can't put you before my wife and daughters.
Oh, well, you do that. I want them to get
it. I'm sure you'd be the first one to tell me that, knowing your character.
Yeah, anyway, well, I'll tell you, I've had clients that offered me their whole entire estate, and I've said twice, no, I will not take a client's
inheritance. Wow, that's beautiful. Well, that's because of they know your heart, and they see that you really care about helping people.
Yeah, what can we do for you?
What would be the best way to approach retirement as far as a will / beneficiaries? We've done some of it. My wife and I did a will a long time ago, but I don't even think that attorney is. I called him, and he said he doesn't even know where it is anymore. So that was like 25 years ago.
You know, what you just said right there, Joe, is a big lesson I want every one of our listeners to hear, and that is do not leave your primary, your original will with the attorney who drafted it unless you have a long-term yearly relationship with them. Because you'd have the same situation Joe had where you get somebody routed. How long ago was it you saw that guy last?
20 years ago.
20 years ago. And he's still, and now he's lost your will and so forth. You should always take your will with you unless you have a lawyer that you do business with on a regular yearly basis. Don't leave it with them. It's a marketing thing for lawyers to want to keep your will. But anyway, go ahead. Ask your question again.
All right, we've got beneficiaries on the Roth IRA, on my Roth IRA, and on our bank account, but we don't have beneficiaries on another retirement.
Okay, so
account.
Let me answer your question because I know exactly where you're going, my friend. Okay, so first thing to understand is beneficiary designations trump the will. Okay, so keep that in mind. All right, so if you put a beneficiary designation down that's wrong, and then you two pass away, that beneficiary designation is not going to be usurped by what your will says. So keep that in mind. Beneficiary designations are very important on retirement accounts, and beneficiary designations can help you avoid probate. But you better understand exactly how that beneficiary designation is going to work. For example, how many children do you have, Joe?
Three.
And how many of those children have children?
None yet.
None yet, but they might.
Yes.
Okay. So one of your children has children, and you put down your three children as the alternate beneficiary, and God forbid your wife passes away first, and then God forbid one of your children passes away who has children. So your two other children are still beneficiaries on there. Who's the custodian going to give all of your money to? They're going to give it 50-50 to your two children, and they're going to disinherit your grandchildren of the child that passed away before you, unless you can get a little designation in there on that beneficiary called per stirpes. If you can get that little tag phrase in there, then your grandchildren will not be disinherited. This is what I mean by understanding your beneficiary designations and making sure they line up with your desire if you put beneficiary designations down on too many accounts.
What about the house, our house, if something happened to both of us? It is paid off.
Your house is going to go to the will unless you put a life estate deed on the house. So if you put a life estate deed on the house, you can avoid probate, but I'm not necessarily sure you want to. You have to be careful about using beneficiaries. It's a great thing and it's a bad thing all at the same time. You just need to know exactly how those beneficiaries are going to work in conjunction with your will. I wish I could go into more of this because this is a great topic, Joe. And you...
What?
you know, what but if I'm out of time.
What if I called your office and do you meet virtually with people?
Sure.
Yeah, we meet always virtually.
410-823-SAVE. 410-823-SAVE.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good note to end on, and you'll probably be hearing from us, sir.
Sounds good.
Joe. Take care.
Do you meet personally, virtually?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
That's great. You're going to be hearing from Joe soon.
Yes, take care. And this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Show them the way you feel. Things are going to be much better.